Welcome to Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. This is episode 39. And we are very excited to have a special guest on today, Kim Davis.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're totally thrilled. Some of our listeners, that would be Mom. Hi, Mom. Might have heard of Kim because she is one of the I don't know, is it a tri-host?
Yes.
You're like the Holy Trinity.
Right. Exactly. That's perfect.
On a podcast called Slaycation about people who get murdered or murder other people.
Yes.
On vacation, Booty and I listened to a number of episodes. It's totally fascinating. But the reason that we are having her on our podcast today is because she is a lifelong crafter extraordinaire, knitter, crocheter. And so we really wanted to learn more about that side of your life. So can you tell us how you started your crafting beginnings?
Oh my God, let me just tell you, I've always been fascinated. It was something that even as a kid, I just, when I would see it, and when you see it in relatives, the crochet granny squares, and I was just mystified. Like, how do you do this? How do you make this? Initially, I learned to crochet as a kid, and it was really helpful. My childhood was a circus side freak show. So there was always stuff going on. And I would actually learn how to crochet from my father's girlfriend.
Oh.
Yes, it's very strange. But it was what started this journey of just what I would do is I would crochet and I would make little blankets as I got older for friends when they were having babies or what have you. And at some point, and I can't quite recall how I learned to knit, but there was a point where somebody had taught me how to cast on. And you know, that really simple cast on that you like, not the long tail, but just the loop. So I knew how to do that, and I would make a couple of scarves doing that, but I always wanted to do more. And I would always say to myself, because by this time I'm an adult, and I'm thinking at some point I want to really learn and hone these crafts. And it just so happened that in the early, I think it was early 90s, a knitting shop. It was like the first knitting shop in my area. It felt like it was almost the first knitting shop ever. And especially in Brooklyn where I live. And it was called a knitting salon. And I would drive past it on my way to work. And I would always have these literal fantasies of just stopping in there and learning how to knit. And sure enough, I would make a day, I would go in there and buy some yarn. And that right there just jump started this journey of like, okay, I've got the yarn, I've got needles, I've got what I need to really get started. And that was where it all began. And after I got married, and then after I had my daughter, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, I was home with my daughter and was not really vibing or feeling the, you know, like in my neighborhood, they had like, oh, come be a new mom in the new mom groups with all the babies born this month. So I went and I would just be like, oh my God, I don't get these people. I'm just like wanting to talk about, oh my God, is this crazy? Do you ever look at your kid and go, who is this person? No, just me. All right. So, and then I realized it occurred to me that this would be a really good time to just pick up my needles, pick up my hook, and just dive right in. And so that's what I did. And I took the opportunity. By this time, the other store had closed, another store had opened, and I just found myself going there all the time. Anytime I passed it, I would go in. And I would literally say to her, I'm just here to fondle the yarn.
Him out.
Yes, exactly. I just need to touch it. I just need to. And we would actually end up, I would become very close friends with this woman. Every class, every workshop, everything that she had, I would take. I took a crochet class that just catapulted my crochet skills through the roof. And then I really started to get into the knitting part. It just took off from there. And the interesting thing about that experience, and especially with knitting, was that I was not initially obsessed with making something as much as I was with just doing it.
Doing it. Yep.
Process of it. Yeah.
And that was very helpful because I came with it without the expectation. It was more centered on, I just need to do this. I just need to make this fabric. I don't know what it's going to look like,
Right.
but, and that was really, really helpful. It also, as the years would pass, would guide the way that I would teach and introduce knitting and crochet to my students.
Peggy Ornstein says she learned from her mother
Yes.
or your dad's girlfriend.
Yes.
But I do think knitting stores are like way underrated as the place where knitting happens. I didn't actually ever take a class in crochet. Well, I don't crochet.
Right, right. A lot of knitters don't. It's always something I've wanted to do.
Yeah.
I mean, not knitting. The interesting thing about crochet was that I came to it because I had convinced myself when I first started, and even as I'd gotten a little older, was that I could do that. I didn't know that I could knit. And crochet just seemed easier, that I could manage it. So I feel like I underestimated myself. I started by underestimating myself. But to not to knock my crocheters out there,
No, yeah,
but
no, and I saw your crocheting
yeah,
on
oh,
Instagram.
thank you. Thank you.
Gorgeous. Yeah. But I do think, like, I was talking to my sister-in-law the other day, and she started knitting, and she said, I just need to go and have somebody show me how to fix mistakes. And I think that's the knitting store thing. It's those classes where you learn stuff and you learn to recognize your mistakes. And that's the thing I love about knitting is you fuck up and then you have to fix it.
Right. Well, and the other thing, I think when I was first starting out, I thought, well, if I spend this $100 on a class, that's $100 that I'm not spending on
And
yarn.
you are, yes.
Yeah, and I'm like, that's a, well, not a sweater, half a sweater. So, yeah, there is a kind of a pause, but you do get so much out of it, and you're
Do.
so much better off because that's something you carry through.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing that's really good about it and that's really wonderful, I know that for me, I had gone into the yarn shop a bunch of times before I actually pulled the trigger on a class. And I just familiarized myself with the owner of the store. She was really great setting me up. But I will tell you, those classes, I just found that sitting for those classes catapulted me into the next level, if you will. It just made it very real. It was very hands-on, and I got clarity of things in real time. And those things I have with me today, after we're talking, what, 20 some odd years. You don't need to keep taking the same classes. You take the class and it's one and done. And then you just take those and you move it on to the next thing. And then you just, that's the great thing about knitting. You just expound on it. You learn different things. You have different experiences. It's like, oh my God, I can knit, I can purl, I can cable. And it keeps going.
Right.
And it just doesn't seem to stop. There's always something else. And that's so great.
Well, and I love the simplicity of it too, that it's basically variations of knit and purl.
Yes.
And yet it's endless variety, all of the things that you can do with it. I actually started off and I was taking a master weaving course. And I actually don't weave that anymore. I mean,
Right.
but
But
it was the portability of it, the way that I could take it out at my son's swim meets.
My
And I'm
God.
totally with you on those La Leche meetings.
Yes, girl. Girl. For real. Girl.
I remember sitting there like at a park, and all of the women were sitting there talking, and their little girls were right out in front of them. And my son was running everywhere. And I thought, this is not fun for me.
Thank you. And your son sounds just like my daughter. Because my daughter wasn't the little girl with her little cute pigtails being cute and playing nicely with the other girls. She was the maniac climbing on the monkey bars and doing gymnastics and going, "Look, mommy, look, mom," and me stroking out and having to recover all within minutes. So I get that.
Yeah, no, it was not relaxing and fun. And I wish now in retrospect that I did have knitting as my, well, you still have to chase them and it would probably be bad
Yes.
chasing
Yes.
them with knitting needles.
At a certain age, I don't know, I may be justifying this, but I felt like if I had my knitting, I was less likely to jump up. And that was kind of a good thing because it gave my son a little more independence. And so I wasn't constantly.
You're right. And I think the thing is, and this doesn't matter if you're a full-time working mom with your kid or a stay-at-home mom, it falls to you. It kind of, it just does. But that's, and I took my daughter to the swim practices and to the meets. That was me, to her lessons. I was the one that jackass around all over the tri-state area to get her to where she needed to be. And one of the things that made that madness enjoyable was that when she was having her practice or doing her lesson, I could sit down. Oftentimes it would be with a coffee or a tea, something to drink, maybe a scone, whatever, and my knitting. The best. It was like such a highlight of my day during that period when I was with her. And it just made it all worth it. It gave me something to look forward to. It made sitting in traffic not that big a deal.
Yeah, because at least you knew that while you were going to have to get them there, once you got them there, somebody else was going to be responsible for making sure they didn't drown and you could have your little bit of time. I mean, I do remember my son coming out once saying, "Okay, I'm ready to go." And I'm like, "Gotta finish this row, bud."
Oh, absolutely.
They learn that really,
They
really
do.
Are you finished with that row, Mom? When are you?
And the row is 500 stitches.
The row is 500 stitches
Exactly. Exactly. That's
Yeah.
so true.
So you were a crocheter before you were a knitter, and the classes seem like those were really foundational for you. But then, how
Oh,
did you
yeah.
make that transition from taking a class to teaching a class?
All I could say was I was mesmerized. I was obsessed. So it was like I would take the class and then I would go home and do it. And wherever I was, if I could do it, if I could do it for 10 minutes, if I could do it for an hour, it was being done. It's kind of crazy how obsessed I was. It was like almost a need. It wasn't even like, oh, I do this every now and again. It was like, I needed to do this. It was like, no, you don't understand. I need to do this. I need this right now. And I think that just that and just picking it up and doing it, and also not being initially stressed by what I was making, because it didn't matter to me so much at first what I was making. It mattered more just doing it. And I think with that, I got really good at it because I would just, and remember how you was talking about the mistakes? Because of that, I was able to look back on it and notice the mistakes. Do you realize I was knitting for about a year, twisting my stitches, not even realizing it? Until somebody pointed out to me, it was actually a woman in the shop that I went to. She says, "Oh, you're, tw I don't know if you're doing that as a design element," she said, "but you're twisting your stitches." And I was like, "Am I?" And then I realized, oh my God, I am. That was great. And yet here I was doing it wrong, but still making something, still creating something, still creating fabric.
Yeah, I think that's another miraculous part is that knitting teaches you to see. It teaches you to pay attention to detail and things that you didn't even notice. Then you're like, oh, that's what happens when I do that.
Yes, exactly.
That kind of permeates other things, like you
It really does.
learn how to pay attention to things. I think that's what maybe is some of the connection between your knitting, well, you said obsession, so knitting obsession, self-proclaimed,
Yes.
and the crime stuff, because the
Yes.
crime stuff is about the details and how
Yes.
the details matter.
Very much so. And that angle of figuring it out. I mean, it's interesting because my crime story has always been a part of my story in the sense that I was and am a voracious reader. And most of my reading is nonfiction, biography, and true crime. My husband always joked about when we first started dating and he would come see me and how he would look at my bookshelf and just notice that they were all these books about
Murder.
serial killers. Yes. And
He
I'm
got a
dating
little
myself.
nervous.
He was unfazed by this.
Exactly. I'm dating myself, but like a lot of these books were Ted Bundy, the Green River Killer, before they even identified the Green River Killer, because they did not have yet the DNA to find out who it was. So it's like that's how far back. Like I was the OG of true crime before there was the TV show where you could consume it 24 hours a day. I was reading about it. And yes, to your point, Bossy, that was the thing that I found very fascinating was the whodunit, the details, what was found, what was heard, who saw what, how is it that eyewitness isn't always accurate? All these things just fascinated me.
I mean, I think knitting is kind of that puzzle too.
It really is, because that's the thing about knitting. When you first cast on and you first start, it doesn't look like much, but then suddenly you take another look and you're like, that's it. That's been there the whole time. And that's very similar, because then it just all falls into place and it all just makes sense. That's the commonality between
Yeah.
crafting, making, and investigating a crime.
And often in knitting, there's a mistake. But I was talking about this with my sister-in-law because I think she's struggling with not recognize. And you'll kind of look at something and you'll realize it's not right, but I don't know what's wrong yet. And you have to kind of
Yes.
keep pull, and then you'll be like, oh, I dropped a stitch.
Right.
It's kind of there all the time, but you can't see it.
Yes. It's interesting. Part of what I've incorporated into my teaching when I would do the workshops and do the central focus is on just doing. We're not worrying about anything. We're just doing. I would say to my students, what we're not going to do is we're not going to rip out. We're going to really try hard not to do that. If it gets to a point where you have to, that's one thing, but we're not going to do that. You're not going to look at it and go, but there's a hole down here. I need to rip it out. We're not doing that. As long as you have stitches on your needle, you're going to knit those stitches and you're going to keep going and keep going and keep going. And then we do what I call a segment in my teaching, forensic knitting.
I
You
love
see?
that.
Yeah. We look at it together and we try to deconstruct. Okay, what happened here? If you're looking at this, we know something happened here. So now we have to figure out what it is. And there's so many different things that I've discovered as a knitter myself, as a beginner knitter, having been one, and seeing it play out in my student.
Yeah.
The mistaken a loop as another stitch, like when you have the yarn held back and you got two stitches facing you when it really is one. It's really
Right.
one. You just have to pull. And as a beginner, you're not realizing this. You're knitting into that. So I'll have students come in.
Right.
They're like, why is it going up? Why is this? Why does it look like I've increased or that I have? And it's been so much fun cracking down with them and getting an answer to this is what you're doing. Let me show you what to look out for.
I love that idea of forensic knitting. I think that's the class that my sister-in-law needs to take.
Yes.
Let me knit and or you plant some mistakes and then
Right.
I
Exactly.
have to
That's a
kind
great
of,
idea.
it's kind of hard to make mistakes when you're used to knitting.
Right.
It's like, wait,
it's not.
Well, okay, unless it's brioche or lace.
Oh, brioche. Well,
I think you
I'm
stack it.
on my cable Odyssey, my Euro sweater, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I'll be like, oh, the honeycomb. I feel like they're just little pockets waiting for food.
Or dust.
Right.
I'm just waiting for crumbs. But anyway, so I'll do one like this, and then I'll have.
Yes. I've done that. I've done that.
And I'll be
It's
like, but
easy.
I thought I was paying attention.
Right.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah, that's when you learn how to fix your cable without ripping out.
I did learn that. And
Yes,
I
and
was very proud
exactly.
of
And
myself.
yet another skill that you've just acquired. That's the thing. That is yet another skill. When you're a true beginner, you're ripping back, you're ripping back, you're ripping back. And as you get more comfortable with the stitches, you can figure out a way to unravel to that spot. As knitters, we know we've done that.
Yeah.
But we also know that we didn't come out the gate doing
Right.
that. And that's what's so fascinating. And I guess that's the thing too, when I am teaching, is having them understand that they will get there. But getting there is a process. Getting there is the journey. It's not going to be an automatic thing. It's like when you get into the car for the first time, or you get on a bike for the first time, when you get in your car, that when you were just driving, you had to learn, you had to practice, you had to, it's like, where was everything? Where's the wheel? All of that stuff. How do I put on my turn signal? You had to learn all that stuff. You wasn't just getting in the car and going up I-95 or wherever it is, that you had to first hone those basic skills. And I would try to really drive that home to my students. That's how you have to look at it.
Yes.
So you're not going to just be able to magically know what to do when you drop a stitch or your cable is facing the wrong way. But you get there.
It always reminds me of one of my favorite scenes in this kids' movie, Meet the Robinsons. Did you ever see that?
No, I haven't.
Well, it came out a while ago. It was one of my son's favorites. And it's about this little boy who wants to be an inventor. And he invents a machine for making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But it ends up spraying peanut butter all over everybody. And then somebody has a peanut allergy.
Oh no. Oh my gosh.
But his mom, who's a famous inventor, comes in and she looks at this sort of mayhem and she says, you failed. That's good. You learn more that way. And I always love that. It's like the
That's
value
brilliant.
of failing. And I think that's what knitting is, a series of often little failures. But it's in the failing that you become a better knitter.
Yes. Yes.
And
I have a question for Kim, because Kim and I, it turns out, we both knit our daughters the same sweater, the Andrea Mowry's Nurtured sweater.
Yes. Yes.
Beautiful design. And your daughter is stunning, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But my kids did not want to wear my hand knits until I got to be a better knitter for now. Was your daughter always a supporter? Did she always wore whatever you made?
When she was a baby, and I would make stuff, and believe it or not, I loved when she was a baby because she was held captive to wearing my knits. But when she got to be a toddler, she put the kibosh on that. She was like, no. I don't like this, she would say. It's not pretty.
And you said, stab your mother in the heart with the knitting needles.
Exactly. So, yes, and this was another thing she would say, it makes me itch.
Oh, yes.
So I'm like, all right.
But now she wears it.
Well, now not only does she wear it, she will ask me.
A triumph.
Yes, well, she's a big Swiftie. So she asked if I would knit her the folklore sweater, which is like a heavily cabled, and I did.
Oh,
And
I saw that. It's stunning.
thank you.
Gorgeous.
He loves it. Yeah. So it's like, so now she asks me, and I'm like, I'll see if I can fit that in. I have a lot going
Yeah.
on.
That was a big project too. The
Yes.
four-color sweater is, yeah.
Yes.
And there were some stars on there.
Yes, some appliques, I think they're called. That was a really fun, laborious, but really fun knit with lots of cables, which I love. You know, that's the other thing about like when you're knitting, what is more rewarding? What is more rewarding? Does anybody have an answer? Because I can't think of anything more rewarding. Like it's just so rewarding. It's so fulfilling. It is the perfect combination of meditating and just peace. And it sounds crazy, but I realize that when I don't have a project, like this past summer, we moved. And so I didn't have anything, like I wasn't knitting because everything was in boxes and I was freaking out. We were really downsizing, so we was moving to a much smaller place and my stash is ridiculous. It is ridiculous, but I'm not ready to part with it, but I can't be told to part with it. I couldn't even process. So I wasn't knitting. I literally could feel it in my body. I could literally feel myself just shorting out a little quicker, being a little bit crankier and just really missing it.
Yeah. There's a great book. Have you heard of The Joy of Yarn? And it's about stash.
Oh my gosh, really?
Because sometimes your stash can be burdening.
Yes, that's true. That's very, very true. That's my next purchase.
Marie Green, Bootie and I, when she came out, she went through my stash. She made suggestions
She
about
didn't listen to any of
things
my
that I
suggestions.
should forego. And I ignored those suggestions.
As usual. Well, and one of the things that Marie says is that to have it be visible. So often we put everything away,
Yes.
and because trying kind of not to look at it, or you know,
Yes.
we're embarrassed, or for whatever reason. And I actually have mine kind of on display. Well, some of it, not all
Right, I
of
heard.
it, but. It does. Every time I look at it, it just makes me happy.
Yes,
Because it
yes.
makes you feel like you're in a yarn store. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
yeah.
still haven't gotten mine out yet because, well, there was mission creep because then we decided that we needed maybe some shelving units that the husband would have to make. So we're still waiting for the
Right.
shelving units.
Yes.
Yes. So what was the first thing that you did after you had that period where you couldn't, that you Yeah.
was the thing that got you, that scratched the itch there? Yeah.
These are really great questions. You know, I feel like you've known me all my life. So let me tell you, the first thing I did was picked up a project that I started years ago, but it put down because it was a very intricate lace pattern and required a concentration. It wasn't the kind of project that you could whip out when you got kids in your ear or your husband asking you what's for dinner or if, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to finish this. It was like a long cotton cardigan that you could wear in the spring. And I had maybe a quarter of the back done. But let me tell you, when we got into the new place and we settled in and I unpacked some of my boxes, I'm not going to say I'm unpacked them all. I got to that project and I just knitted it through. And it was like, again, so if I tell you guys how satisfying that was, I mean, how many times I would fuck up and have to rip it back because I made some crazy mistake, how I had to concentrate. It felt so good just to be back in the saddle with it. I had to do something where I was going to really feel the impact of having not knit. I was like, no, you're not going to just knit. You are going to hardcore knit, okay?
Yeah.
You're going to have to count your stitches every row you finish to make sure it lines up.
You're going to have multiple stitch markers.
Exactly. it was like this lace cardigan, and that was the first project that I got right back into when we moved, and I hadn't knitted in a long time. And oh, did it feel good.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great.
You said the yarn was cotton. Was it,
Yes.
what color was it?
It was like a neutral, I want to say, probably closer to beige.
Okay. Interesting that you chose something that, because I always think of lace as the magic is when you block it, like
Yes.
afterward,
Yes.
that
Yes.
it's kind of a
Yes.
delayed gratification because you see all the fanciness of.
Yes, that is very true. The interesting thing about this cotton, though, and I still will block it, but the drape of it is beautiful. Eventually, I will block it, but I was just so happy to just have it knitted up because I'm one of those people that I don't block pieces always individually before sewing it together. A lot of times what I'll do is I'll sew it together and then block it to the measurements. The blocking of lace is amazing. You know, I remember I had knit this shawl. Again, the high of when you're done and it was blocked, I can't tell you the high that I got just seeing the way the stitches unfolded. It's amazing.
Booty's not a big fan of lace.
Right. Right.
But I do like the way that it appears.
Yes.
I think it's absolutely beautiful and I admire it. I just have the patience to do it.
Right. Well, that's the thing, because you do have to have the patience, and you know that there are certain things that you don't have the patience for. And it's interesting because, like, I find that I kind of love everything. I guess because I had for so long always wondered what it would be like to be able to do it, that now being able to do it and do it well, I am just high on it. So, whatever I can do, I will do it. We have a little knitting circle that we have, and we get together like the second week of every month, or we try to. It doesn't always work out. And they kind of laugh at me because I'm just always so excited, no matter what it is. When I work on a sweater, for example, I'll have one say, yeah, I like to do it in one piece because I don't want to have to deal with sewing. The crazy thing is, I love the sewing. I not only love the sewing, I love weaving in the ends. They're like, you're crazy. But I do. I do. I love weaving in the ends. I love hiding it. I love it. It just, I know, I know.
Sometimes I think that it's when you don't know how to do it that you don't love
Yeah.
it. So once you know how to do it, then it's fine.
Right.
So it's sort of when you're not sure.
I guess I don't know how to do it then, because I don't like it.
No, thank you.
I noticed on your Instagram that you had this patchwork sweater.
Yes.
I immediately was like, oh my God, all the ends that you would have to weave in and all the sewing. So tell me about that patchwork sweater, and we're going to have to put a picture on it.
Harry Styles had this sweater, and my daughter's best high school girlfriend was a big Harry Styles fan. She really liked the sweater. So I essentially just made that for her.
Did you have a pattern or did you just?
That's the interesting thing. There is a pattern. I don't know if it's a great pattern. I think as knitters, what we come to view patterns as, it in many ways is more of a guide than, because there was a lot on that pattern that I just transformed and
Did your own thing.
right. But yes, to answer the question, there is a pattern. That was another really laborious knit. But the interesting thing that pattern, I'm trying to think what that pattern did, because there was some things where it would have you like knit it like three squares so that it would help with not having to seam all those squares.
Oh, okay. So you're basically making little scarves that you're putting together.
Right. The charm of it was that it wasn't supposed to look especially finished. Although mine does because I'm
Yeah, I was
obsessed.
gonna say you're weaving.
I'm gonna weave in all those ends.
Yeah, no, all my ends are woven in. There's nothing inside out. I'm like, no, it's all right side facing. And that was a lot, but it was so much fun.
You weave in as you go? Sometimes, okay.
Sometimes where I can, I do. If there's somewhere where I can see it, like in that moment, then yes.
I try to discipline myself to weave in as I go, and I pretty much fail every single time. I'll do it maybe for the first two, and then I'll be like, oh, I can wait.
Yes, and that makes sense.
I do feel like there's a way that, well, like the mistakes and fixing and just that practice of, I think everybody should always have something that regularly humbles them with their failures.
Yes.
I also wanted to ask you, though, you were a social worker for a number of
Yes.
years. I wondered how much the knitting, because it sounds like you were working as a social worker in the 90s when you were going to that store. And I wondered if there was a connection between the social work and knitting.
I guess the connection for me, it was again coming face to face with that desire of really wanting to knit, but also in that work, just really needing,
A release.
yes, that release, that meditative, repetitive way to just settle. That work, very challenging, and you're literally interacting with people during the worst times in their lives.
Yeah.
That manifests in many different ways. It manifests with being there as a shoulder to cry on, being there as a punching bag, because that just invariably happens because I'm mad at the world and I'm mad at my situation. Who can I scream at? And also, the thing about knitting that, and I never really got a chance to do this, but I had thought at one point, I would love to bring that to my clients.
I wondered about that, yeah.
And at that point, I wasn't as confident in my skill set to do something like that, but it was certainly something that I had thought about. Again, the meditative and soothing energy. And the one thing about knitting is that even when it's not necessarily soothing, because we have those moments where you're shorting out and you're like, what the fuck did I do back here? Your mind is not on anything but that. You're not thinking
Right.
about, and that to me is such, and was, and still is, such a great release from the worries and the world's woes.
I think that is why you chose the lace project too. That's the kind of thing where you really have to have all of your focus.
Exactly. That's so well put, Booty, because I had been away from it for a while and was starting to really feel it. It was like running as fast as I can to the deep end of the pool, having not swam in a really long time, but I needed to do it and then figure it out. It's hard, but I'm refreshed,
Right.
I'm rejuvenated, I'm revived.
Yes. Yes. That is another question. Are you a monogamous knitter or do you different projects?
I will tell you, I typically don't have more than three projects on the needle at once. Okay. And it's funny because my friends will typically have five, six, seven. I'm very serious about finishing. And I guess, especially since I've spent so much of my time, especially in my early knitting days, knitting just for the knitting sake of it and doing of it. Now I'm a little bit more preoccupied with the finishing than I was. So another thing that I just love about knitting so much, I love it so much, is that if I feel like I need something different, if I need to look at something different, I'll go to my stash and I'll whip up a hat and put it away to give as a Christmas gift. Because sometimes you just need to do something different.
I absolutely agree that doing a big project and a little project.
Yes.
This, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Booty taught me that. But I think the other thing, like right now, I'm doing a cable sweater, and it's kind of a sagey neutral. And I was thinking, I'm really craving color right now.
That's true
And I
too.
need to do, and I'm even considering, because I noticed you had a brioche hat.
Oh, yeah.
Brioche is Bossy's nemesis.
Yes. I've started one, and I think you even had the one that I started. Granted, it was not the best one to start brioche on because it's like this.
Yeah.
No.
Not like most people do, like a cup warmer.
No, it is really true. I did several squares of brioche. Lots of squares.
You could make
Yeah.
a patchwork brioche.
That would be a cool sweater, a patchwork brioche.
Yes,
That could,
yes.
I could contribute some squares to that.
Yes,
That
yes.
could be a fun project for us.
That could definitely be a fun project.
But yeah, no, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm kind of drowning in sage.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, and you probably are feeling the need for a pop of color too. Like
Yeah.
looking at
Yeah,
something.
other than like a piece of food stuck in the honeycomb. And
Right.
the other thing I'm finding, because I know we share the bad dog,
Yes.
is dog hairs.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm spending
Everywhere.
so much time
Everywhere.
poking
Yes.
dog hairs.
Yes.
Like,
Yes.
nobody's going to want this sweater. It's half of Toby. But
Yeah, you gotta love them. You gotta love them. They that's what they do.
one thing we should ask is if you have any recipes that you wanted to share since we're eat, drink, share.
Here's the interesting thing. I don't like to cook.
That's okay.
I guess a lot of it too, like we had this really crazy childhood, me and my sister, and we used to have to cook for our dad. And he was a, God rest his soul, he was a menace, very critical. I remember very vividly getting screamed at for lumpy farina. I think hers was crunchy rice. We're both just like, yeah, we're not doing this. But here's the thing though, when you have children and they need to eat, and then they call you out for microwaving every dinner, you realize you have to make some changes. So I would make something that I really, really like. And it was this curry, more in the West Indian vein than the traditional, like that you'll get in an Indian restaurant. It's more
Okay.
Jamaican, Trinidadian style. Yeah. And it would curry chicken, and it would be with chicken. I put some chickpeas in there and potatoes. Then I started putting cauliflower because I didn't want it to be too starchy, and just work my magic with that. And it would come out pretty good. I just wish that I enjoy cooking more.
That sounds really
That
delicious.
sounds really good,
Thank
though.
you.
You need to
Thank
send
you.
us the recipe because
I will. I will.
yeah. And I feel like that is an important thing to have as a good past. You know, honestly, I don't always enjoy. It's the everyday,
Yes, no, I know
what's
exactly
for
what you
dinner? It's like every day,
mean. Yes, every single day.
every single day.
Every day.
And even if you're eating out, it's where are we going to go?
Yes, no, it's
What are
all
we?
kind of crazy that you have to navigate. Yes.
Yes. So I hear you on having a good, and that's part of why we do the eat, drink, knit is because it's sort of here's what you can throw on the table so that you have more time to knit.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, I also make a nice spaghetti and meat sauce dish, right? And the funny thing about that is I would literally make a big batch of it and then just have it for dinner and every night until it's. But my husband is very, of course, I married this guy that doesn't like leftovers, isn't psyched to have the same thing every, I could have it every night for, I'm like, literally, I could do cereal and a beer and be like the dinner of champions. I'm good. But no, that's not him.
I have the same problem.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
right. It's so.
We need to send all the leftover. Bossy's husband will eat leftovers.
Oh my
Yeah.
God.
But my son will not. And that was
Oh.
always the thing. And I
Right.
remember listening to this woman the other day, because I mean, I definitely felt like, you want to eat again?
Already?
Already?
Mm-hmm.
How about just an ice cream dinner? I remember this woman saying, instead of saying, I have to make dinner for my family, you should say, I get to make dinner for my family. And I thought, that's kind of okay. That's just,
Different outlook.
you know how long that lasted? One day.
Yeah.
One day. I was like, oh, I get to make dinner for my family. Yes, this is a change in mindset. The next day, I was like, back to fucking making dinner.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
The truth comes out.
But
Oh
it was good for a day. That was all
my
it lasted.
We'll celebrate a good one day.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
But this curry dish sounds really good. And it sounds like you can make it in one pot, which is the other thing that we like because we don't like a lot of dishes. We like big batch, have it multiple nights,
No,
one pot.
exactly.
Okay, well, we need to get the recipe for that and we'll put it on the thing. Because I think most people, though, we've all got maybe half a dozen things that we just make again and again.
Yes, no, exactly. It's something easy, something you can just throw in a pot. I'm about that life.
Yeah, it's
I'm
like
about
our mother's crock pot chicken, which we all hated.
true, but oh my God.
Now, if she made that, I'd be like, woohoo,
I
I don't
know.
have to cook dinner.
Oh boy, do I remember the crock pot. How I underestimated the excellence.
Well, we should, I don't know, final thoughts on knitting that you want to.
Was there anything that for the true crime and knitting or crochet, were there any true crimes that involved knitting and crochet that you looked
I
at?
have not come across. I have not. But I will tell you, I do engage my audience with knitting and crochet. So my audience will post what they're making if they're making something. And I love that. And one of the things that I like to do when I'm talking to my audience is to encourage their craft, whatever that is, whether it's knitting, crocheting, whether it's drawing a painting, whether it's spinning or weaving. Just do it. Just do it. It's such a great way to disconnect from the chaos of the world and the madness of it. It's just a great way to just center yourself and have your mind out of the orbit of insanity, but on to what it is that's right in front of you. And I think that that's really important. I really, really think when I say to people, you need a hobby, it's not an insult.
No.
It is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Yeah, I also feel like that's the perfect combination to me of listening to a good podcast and like knitting, because to me that's the sweet spot of, and I like the story and the narrative of the true crime,
Yes.
because you kind of get involved in the people behind it. And I always like, well, I like the format, and we should explain that Kim and one of her tri hosts,
Right.
Jerry, that you guys know the story, but
Yes.
you're
My husband is coming in.
narrating it
Yes.
for sort of response and color comment,
Exactly.
off color commentary.
Exactly. Yes, definitely off color.
But one of the things I really liked about Slaycation is that you set the scene
Yeah.
and tell the sort of, this is the place and these are the people. And I feel like that's where your sociology, context is everything, comes into play there.
Exactly. That's so true.
And I also think it's really important we get to learn something about these people's stories before they die.
Yes,
But it's
exactly.
that that gives us an empathy,
Yes, and that's so important.
and that then also connects us when we're also laughing, but it's out of a sort of caring place
Right,
too,
right. I mean, the laughing, a lot of it is just for the levity because we're talking about people, we're talking about families that have experienced, that are going through that are living the worst nightmares of their lives. And I think the dark humor adds levity. It makes it more palatable to hear. And being able to present something in a way that it can be heard, I think it makes it easier to digest. And one of the things that I really, really, really try to bring to it is honoring the memory of our victims and honoring their memory in a way that says, this was a terrible thing that happened to you. And wherever you are, hopefully your spirit is free and at peace. And what is it that we can do? It's sort of like a cautionary tale. What can we do to move in this world more with safety and ease? How can we do that? How can we look out for each other? And so those are the things that I really want to bring in. I try to, when I'm moving in the world, I'm trying to think of ways in which I can keep my neighbor safe and look out. And if somebody is, it's like if I see somebody crying on the street, like I literally will go up to them and ask them, are you okay? Is there anything I can do? Because it's only us in this world. And it's because of those people that we are talking about, these awful people that just for whatever reason have to do awful things to other people. That's why we can't have nice things.
There's a number of stories where there are people around who don't intervene. This horrible thing is happening, and they're recording it on their phone. I'm struck again and again by how many times, these people meet a terrible end, and then they're kind of victimized by bad police work.
Oh my God, over and over and over again.
And you just have the sense of, well, these are people that are, they're not from this area, and so nobody cares, that they're not somebody's mom, and these poor families are trying to find out what happened to her next to this lake. But I do think that the podcast and the knitting, that's my sweet spot where I like to hear something and be able to follow it, but also be able to be feeling like, well, I'm knitting though, so.
Just it makes sense. It does. It makes sense. I mean, I'm a huge podcast listener. I could always be seen sitting with my ear pods on and knitting. And it was great because I didn't always feel like making small talk with the parents of a lot of these activities. And I could just be in the background, if you will. And it was chef's kiss. Mwah. Just a great way to just, again, lose myself, be in another world, hear these stories.
I love when you say chef's kiss. The other thing I love when you say, there's two other things. When you say that there's a red flag and it's like the Red Sea, it's like you went on a Christian dating site and then you married the guy 3 days later. That's the Red Sea.
It totally is. It
I like when
totally
you say reel it in.
is. I like when you say reel it
Yeah, because sometimes they go a little bit, and I'm like, okay, let's.
Well, and I just have this image of like the fishing reel and
And
these
that's
two men
accurate.
just sort of getting pulled back to, Kim Davis land of let's remember the story and the past. Yes. Well, it's a great show and we enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It
But,
means a lot. It really does.
and thank you so much for coming on our show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Well, thanks. We enjoyed it. And our mom, who's our only listener, she's going to enjoy
Well, thank you, Mom.
it
Yeah, Kim says hi, Mom.
Yes. Hugs and kisses, too.
Yeah. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't knit like
Knit
my
my
sister.
sister.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.